And we're the London Girls.
And this is the London Girls podcast.
Yes.
Thank you so much for tuning in. This is really exciting for me.
And nerve-wracking as well.
Yeah.
But no, we're going to go ahead with this. Make it just like a conversation. Just like how we usually are talking to each other all the time when we do talk to each other. It's just, you know, natural flowing conversation. Yeah. So, yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
Stay on that. This isn't needed. This section right here is me explaining it's not needed.
I mean, but we do want to talk to you about why we decided to put this podcast together. We've actually been planning this for a while now, haven't we?
Yeah.
I don't even know how long it's been. Because I think initially we wanted to do videos, right?
A video channel of us demoing different hairstyles or food cooking or trying out some kind of online, I don't know, hack for life, something like that. But it was, now it's a podcast.
Yeah. Well, I know that I wanted to do a podcast anyway because I'm just such a massive podcast junkie. I think the video thing is like a bit, I don't know if I've got thick enough skin to handle all the potential criticism that could come with doing videos. Because people are mean online, man. People are mean.
But we actually met via, video. When you think about it, we met via YouTube.
We did. How long ago was this?
Oh my goodness.
Do you even remember? It's so long ago.
It's probably over seven years ago.
I think it was like 2009-ish.
2009.
Or was it 2008? I think it was like 2008, 2009-ish.
Okay.
And I know it was just before I'd started uni. I don't even remember, man. It's been so long.
It's been a very long time.
And so I remember watching Janice's videos on YouTube, and Janice would use her lute pedal and her guitar and do these really amazing renditions of, like, you do these covers. I think you covered Nina Simone.
Yeah.
And I really just fell in love with you, honestly, because at the time I didn't have that many friends who were doing creative stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just looking at you thinking, oh my gosh, how do I even become friends with this girl? But I didn't try and meet you to become your friend. That makes sense.
Wait, you came out to you were invited to perform at a Spread Love event.
Yes.
And then it's like, ah, I'd say that from the internet.
Yes, yes. And I also remember meeting everyone in the Spread Love Collective. For those of you who don't know what or who the Spread Love Collective we were like about, I don't remember how many we were, but we were DJs, we were musicians, we were
poets,
singers, and we
rappers.
Rappers. And we used to do different events in London, performance and showcase events.
The main event as well was in Camden at the Lockside Lounge.
Yeah.
It's a lovely venue.
That
right
was
on
awesome.
The lock.
I miss those times.
Yeah.
Yes.
Full band. But yeah, we met via that. And then ever since, it's been, we've been collaborating.
Yeah.
In terms of collaborating in, photography and also your filmmaking, with the video that you made for Gilded Age.
Oh, yeah.
That was amazing.
Oh, thank you.
And then also, because Zainab also is a musician and singer and songwriter, and she works with Lute Pedal too, producing as well.
Yeah.
And her stuff is amazing.
Oh,
she
thank
has,
you.
No, I love, you get a car, you get a car, you get a car. Okay. That's a beautiful song.
Thank you. We're like silly
it's my
things.
Favorite.
But thank you. I appreciate that. I'm really in love with all my friends, all the people who I'm friends with. Like, I'm just very much in love with them all. But the thing I really enjoy about our friendship is that it never feels forced. It's just very natural and organic. And I think, we just have the same kind of way of thinking about stuff. Like, we never really clash.
Not particularly, on
things, which, and you know, you're just really easy to get along with. You're really chilled, and I really like you a lot.
Oh, I like you too.
Okay, we're going to stop gushing over each other and move things along.
Mm-hmm. We actually gathered quite a lot of content just over the Friday gone, and it was at the Black British Girlhood exhibition, the opening night, which took place down in Hackney.
Yeah.
Organised by Becky, Karima and Olivia. And we're going to have links for everything, so we're not going to be too detailed about where and when and who and what the links are, because we will post it within this, you know, in the description. But it was looking at, I guess, a part of the British experience which is not usually, like, you know, highlighted.
Absolutely. Yeah. I feel like the Black British experience is just such an invisible thing in media and in history, culturally.
Specifically Black British Girl.
Exactly, yeah. And this exhibition was amazing. It felt like food for the soul, because it was so inspiring to go into an exhibition space and know that everything, every piece of art was made by a Black woman or a Black girl. It was, I've never really been to anything like this in my whole entire life.
Never experienced that.
And we've lived in London our whole lives. And can you imagine, like, this is the first time that we've been able to experience something like this?
Yeah, and it was beautiful. I mean, the entire atmosphere was just joyful and loving. And, I mean, I'm not someone who regularly visits, you know, art spaces and exhibitions. I don't know, I don't feel the need. If I go out to enjoy some kind of culture, it's usually music or a show.
Yeah, me
but
too.
In terms of actually visiting an art exhibition, I haven't done it very often. I've done it, but not very often. And usually when I do it, I don't see many reflections of myself.
Mm.
Whereas with this, it was, you know, there were books, storybooks, there were photographs, there were drawings and illustrations. There was so much, just a beautiful range of stuff as well. And the whole energy of the thing, just, I really enjoyed it, genuinely enjoyed it.
I really enjoyed it too. I really underestimated how much I would enjoy it. But I feel like that's the best thing, when mm-hmm. you go into an experience with really limited expectations and you just go and experience it for what it is. I'm really excited about the fact that I got to meet Kay Davis. I'm such a Kay Davis fan. Kay Davis is a mixed media artist. She does paintings. She makes really interesting jewelry with textiles, and I you know what, her work is so magical. I can't even put it into words. You just have to go to her Tumblr or her Instagram and check out what she does. And I got to speak to her as well. She's the sweetest girl ever. And she was talking about how she's very conscious of, at this time, she's very conscious of people seeing her work.
Mm-hmm.
Because for a while, she's just, you know, been in her little space, doing her thing, making her work and just, like, sharing it on the internet. But now it's become really apparent that there's eyes on her. And I remember just saying to her, look, you know, don't let that change what you do. Don't let that influence the way you make your art, because there's girls like me who are looking up to you
mm-hmm.
to make things that are just real
mm-hmm.
to you. So don't ever feel pressured by any industry or whatever corporate situation comes into play. I think it's just all about that really instinctual expression to just make whatever comes out of you without the fear of judgment, without the fear of people not liking it. Who cares if people don't like it? There will be a group of people who do like it, and that's what matters.
I remember there was a guy also talking about, you know, in terms of getting the stuff into other types of products
mm-hmm.
as well. Because I would love to wear a t-shirt with her illustrations on it.
Right. Oh yes.
I would absolutely love that.
Merchandising. Yes.
Merchandise with her illustrations.
Oh,
it would be amazing. A book of her illustrations.
Yeah.
I hope she does all of that. I hope she definitely gets, because there would be a market for it. There would be people who want to see that and
absolutely.
Want to enjoy it and consume it. And the other artist there that I really enjoyed too, her name was Angela Simper, which I hope I'm pronouncing properly. She had a book called My Curly Hair, which when I think of, you know, my childhood in terms of seeing a book of someone who had hair like me in the book, that never happened. So
just let the people know what kind of hair you have, Janice.
I have hair that reaches for the heavens. That's how I always wear it.
Janice's hair is my default look. Janice's hair is amazing. It literally defies gravity. It just stands, and it's amazing.
But this book is, yeah, it's a celebration of that, a celebration of our hair, of the different textures, of the way it reaches for the clouds, the way it looks like clouds. Mm. Really beautiful book. And I just remember looking for it, thinking, oh, this would be wonderful, you know, like if I have a daughter one day, or for my friends who have daughters, or even sons as well, you know, just to see that reflection of themselves in these things where you don't usually see it. You don't, and that's the thing that kind of gives you a sense of humanity as well, seeing reflections of yourself, whether it's on the television, whether it's in, you know, in art and portraits and photographs.
Yeah.
I remember for a while, I never ever saw anything of myself in mainstream media other than if the ITV news was like doing a story on a crime that's happened or something, or something about Trident. That was it. That was the only reflection. So this has been just so kind of, it's just lighthearted and warming.
And it was a lot of fun as well. There was music as well. So we, you know, got to dance and sing to some of our favourite songs.
Stuff that would not play in an art gallery usually.
Definitely not. We're going to give you a bit. We're going to give you a taste of what it sounded like on the night.
As you can hear from the little clip there, it was just pure energy, pure vibes. It was wicked.
Beautiful vibes. I mean, you know, Destiny's Child is just that band. Was that band.
I was telling you that at the time as well, like, I absolutely used to hate on Beyonce when I was younger. I had no appreciation for Beyonce
when I was a teenager. I don't understand how you dislike Beyonce. Beyonce was everything.
She's too mainstream. It's just R&B. I was so hateful of it all.
Beyonce still is everything. I mean,
she really is.
I mean, she's not perfect, but she works hard, isn't
it? Undeniably hard, yeah.
And she makes really
the whole
good
band
music.
Did. Yeah. Undeniably hard. So also we in during the night as well, Becky, who is one of the organisers, she was just so thankful, gave a beautiful thanks at the end, tear-filled thanks. Just thanking all the artists, thanking everyone that took part, and just also giving a lot of gratefulness, showing a lot of gratefulness to those who were just concerned about the process of getting this out, because that must have been so much stress putting together an art exhibition.
I remember she was saying something about how what really mattered was someone asking, are you okay?
Mm-hmm.
How are you doing? And like, she was just really, she had a lot of gratitude for that sentiment of, you know, someone caring, how are you doing okay, which is something that you don't really get a lot of, especially in this industry, which is just very quick, you know, people don't tend to care about your well-being.
Your journey to that point.
They just care about the finished,
the end product.
Yeah, they just want to see the work, that's it.
Yeah, no struggle, just the work.
Like we put on what this means. It's like celebrating, affirming, and that's what you do all the time. And I just want to thank all the artists: Kay Davis, Adama, Angela,
Charity,
Samantha. tour, we want to thank Michelle, we want to thank Jordan, thank you for coming all the way down, thank you so much. We want to thank Sienna, we want to thank Kayla, thank you all so much for coming and supporting us. Like, every the money that we receive goes back to the project. The thing is, like, we tried for funding, emails, we didn't get nothing. So this is coming out of our own. Like, it's coming about everything, like, literally, like I've been saying, like, for us, this was by us. So, thank you so much. We want to thank everybody who, like, showed us a lot of support throughout asking about our well-being. Like, that is, means so much, asking how we're doing throughout this. Thank you so much.
Also, on the night, I got to bump into a really good friend of mine, Shanaz Dorset, who I've not seen in ages. Shanaz Dorset is such a talented singer, and she was with a friend, her name's Nana. We briefly interviewed them about their experience as a black British girl in London, and here's some of it.
Hello, I'm Shanaz Dorset.
Hi, I'm Nana Duncan.
And where are we today?
We are in the heart of Hackney at the British Black Girlhood exhibition launch.
How did you not hear about this exhibition?
I heard about it, well, I saw it on Instagram, and my friend, he invited me here, and he's friends with the girl who's doing the exhibition today.
And what do you think about it so far?
Brilliant.
It's amazing, yeah. It's nice to see, you know, young black people come together and show their work, because there's not much going around in London, so it's really, really nice to come, especially in the heart of Hackney. I'm born and bred from, you know, Hackney. This is, you know, my playground, so it's really nice, you know, to come here and see all of this brilliant work.
Can you talk a little bit about your black girl experience, your black British girl experience in Hackney? What's that been like for you?
It's like different stages. So if we're going back to secondary school, being from Africa, it was quite, you know, there's quite a difference being, you know, from Africa and, you know, Caribbeans. It's like there was kind of like a conflict between them too. But growing up, we've kind of like merged together, which is amazing. You can see that black people have come together as a collective, and it's really good to see, you know, the support, you know, within the community.
Mm. And Shanaz, I know that you are an extraordinary singer. Can you tell me about what it's been like for you being an artist in London, especially being of mixed heritage? What's your experience been like?
I suppose it's always quite political making music in the UK as a person of colour.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, it seems like there's a bit of a one-in, one-out policy. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, with that, at times you feel like you're pit against other artists of colour, and even worse so, pit against other female artists of colour. I mean, I'm always joking around saying, okay, like, if Leanne Lahavas has a baby, then I'm in there, you know, or something. And I kid, but that's kind of pushed me to really, like, make sure there's always a sense of, like, solidarity and kinship with my fellow artists, because, you know, it's things like this, it's events like this, it's these pockets of, like, you know, of unity and interacting with one another, where we get so inspired, and where, like, where we can really hit an audience that understands us. So I think when I stopped kind of chasing this idea of being exposed as a British artist and realise that there is an audience right kind of on our doorstep,
yeah,
that's actually helped me to expand as an artist and expand with my success. So, yeah.
Thank you so much, ladies.
You're welcome.
Appreciate it. I can't wait to hear everything that you guys have put together.
Definitely be sending it to you, both of you.
Yeah. Can't wait.
Thank you.
The exhibition, the opening night obviously was last week Friday, which was the 24th of July, and it is continuing its run until the 6th of August, so you can get down to the venue to still see the art that was up there, the beautiful pieces, the book that's on sale by Angela as well, and yeah, take in all the art, and it'll be there for you till the 6th, basically, till the 6th.
I do definitely recommend that you go have a look. And even if you're unable to make it down, do check out the artists that we've mentioned. We will be leaving links to their websites in the description bar. So yeah, definitely have a look and support.
And now we're going to talk about Khloe Kardashian's behind.
Are we actually
still happening?
Are we still gonna have?
We're gonna talk about fat transfer.
We're gonna talk about fat transfer because
this might not make it into the podcast, but hey ho.
We'll just see how it goes.
Which Kardashian is this at the bottom?
Is it
Khloe or Kourtney?
It is actually my belief that they've all had something done. Now, whether they're going to be completely honest and transparent about it, we will never know.
Well, I don't really need them to be. I mean, I like the look of it. I'm not concerned about their honesty necessarily. Mm-hmm. I like the way it's turned out. It looks wonderful to me.
I'm just indifferent. I don't really care.
Not necessarily. I mean, obviously there have been terrible jobs done on this kind of thing.
Yeah.
But the idea of having my fat removed from my tummy,
mm-hmm.
to put it elsewhere where I'd enjoy the sight of it more.
Would you actually really do it?
If I had the money, I'd consider it if I could tolerate the pain, but I'm so bad of pain. So it probably would never happen.
But I've seen videos of people having fat transfer surgery and they're actually awake when the stick is going into them, sucking out all the fat.
Why are they awake? They need to be awake.
They're drugged up to an extent.
Jeez.
So that they don't feel all the pain. But have you not watched any videos?
I haven't actually ever seen any videos.
I'm gonna play you a video and you're gonna see how people actually are talking. Yes, they are wide awake and talking while this is happening, and the surgeon's just there, just, you know, sucking all the fat out.
Is this legit surgery or is this dodgy?
I don't know, but I know that this is what is happening.
Wow.
So would you actually do this?
I wouldn't mind. If I could tolerate the pain, I wouldn't mind.
Don't you think we're becoming just a generation of very lazy people?
Definitely.
It's all about like the waist trainers and fat transfer. Like, people don't want to work hard for their bodies anymore. Or people don't want to accept the bodies that they have.
That's a big part of it. I think accepting the body you have. I think that's also another thing that's, you know, I'm not particularly bothered to do. If I could do it, if it wasn't like costing me too much and it wasn't too painful, but obviously it's going to be both of those things. It's going to cost me loads and it's going to be super painful, so I probably wouldn't do it anyway. But if those two things were erased, I wouldn't mind. I remember you explaining it to me earlier as well, like, what was it you were saying, this fat transfer thing, like, it was a terrible thing. I was like, this is not a terrible thing. I would welcome this.
I think it's just really odd how you know that the fat from your back and your arms and wherever has just gone on into a different place. I just find that really strange.
Yeah, see, that sounds wonderful to me. That doesn't sound distressing or odd. I wouldn't mind it.
Well, I mean, I'm not in a position to want fat transfer. I don't really have that much fat on my body anyway, but I think maybe if I was to put on a lot of weight in the future and I wasn't happy with my looks, and if I had... I just wouldn't do it! Mm-hmm. What am I talking about? I wouldn't do it! I just would not do it. That's just... No, the idea of surgery or anything cutting me open actually scares
me. So... I mean, it's quite ridiculous to go under the knife, be put to sleep, you know, put your body at risk with major surgery that you don't really need.
Yeah.
Definitely. Yeah. And that's why it's not going to happen. My tummy fat will stay where it is.
So what do you think? Okay, so with all this stuff like fat transfer and waist trainers and all these fad diets, what do you think we need to do to start just accepting how our bodies are?
I think what's really helped me with not becoming obsessed about it, because, I mean, other than talking about it today, that's not something I think of all the time at all.
Mm-hmm.
But definitely Tumblr has helped with just seeing women who put their bodies out there in the state that it is in. And it's absolutely wonderful to see, and it's beautiful to see.
Mm-hmm.
And it's helping me to not become desensitized to what a real body looks like, because I think that's happening a lot.
Yeah.
You're seeing all these bodies that look kind of aesthetically perfect.
Yeah.
And that's what you're expecting to be the norm.
Mm-hmm.
And definitely Tumblr is helping to keep the balance.
Yeah, shout out to Tumblr, man. Tumblr's amazing. I get so much inspiration from Tumblr. Tumblr really helps me feel like I'm not alone in the world, because I really see other like-minded girls doing similar things that I do, and I just feel like, okay, I'm okay. Like, mm-hmm. I'm not crazy. I'm not an alien. I'm not weird. And I just love
Or you are, but there's a bunch of others who are too.
Yeah, and it's okay. It's okay to embrace that. I love how there's this low-key body acceptance movement on Tumblr.
Yeah.
Because no one ever really speaks about it, saying that, yes, this is a self-loving, body-positive movement. But Tumblr just is that way for us.
Yeah.
And I think it does also depend on the type of people that you follow. But I know the type of people I follow do celebrate body positivity and just positivity in general. Like, people are always just, like, cool and helping each other out. And
yeah. And I think that's an important part of it, is who you surround yourself with in terms of online.
Yes.
I mean, I was talking to a girl. She's so beautiful. She's so talented. And she was getting really hung up on the darkness of her skin.
Wow.
To a point where she actually attempted to bleach it.
What?
Yeah. And she's beautiful, like, literally she is beautiful, and she's also just talented in terms of what she's achieved in her own field. I'm not going to, like, be obvious about what her field is, but she's done really well within the field she's in.
Yeah.
And still, just the stinging words of someone telling her she's too dark, it's had an impact to a point where she's decided to bleach her skin. But that's because I think she's not quite found that group online where it's like positivity about, you know, the texture of your hair, positivity about the color of your skin,
and also so therefore weight she's, as well,
and weight, and so she's seeing, because the stuff that kind of makes it into the mainstream, that kind of sneaks over, is like the really negative, ugly stuff, because it, you know, it's attention grabbing, and that's the stuff that she sees on Twitter, and, you know, people talking about like guys and girls who are black but maybe a bit lighter skin, talking about people who are darker. And, you know, I don't surround myself with that stuff, and somehow, because I don't surround myself with that stuff, it doesn't come into my mind in any way, it doesn't play on my mind in any way. A similar thing with my hair. When I started, like, not relaxing my hair when I was, like, was it 13 or something? I don't know, I just surrounded myself with things that were positive to what I wanted to achieve with my hair.
Yeah.
And I tend to avoid, like, the comment section on videos, because usually that's where you find absolute trolls. So in terms of trolling, like, not necessarily on a natural hair vid, but on, say, if there's a video and it's a woman with natural hair in the video, either the start, or even a picture of someone just enjoying their dark skin in the sun, or, you know, and it's usually not necessarily on the video specifically aimed at people who want to try and figure out, you know, how to deal with their natural hair, but on videos that just might feature someone with natural hair in it, or a picture that might have, and it's usually on, yeah, on YouTube or on Facebook. I've seen even a picture of someone getting all these ugly comments, they're sunbathing, they're quite dark skinned. And I think she also put a filter on it as well that made her, that kind of enhanced the darkness of her skin, like, it wasn't an issue for her. And people are like, you know, don't so stay in the sun too long, that kind of thing, underneath her picture.
That's ridiculous.
So people who are really insecure with someone just enjoying their own skin, I have seen definitely that on Facebook, on YouTube. And yeah, I just tend to avoid those comment sections to avoid that kind of negativity, basically.
Well, that's really sad that this person that you know felt that, you know, they wanted to bleach their skin, because it's just such a shame that with the time that we're living in today, people are not allowed to just feel okay and just to celebrate who they are.
Yeah, but then, I don't know, I mean, then we're also talking about the kind of ambiguous racial stuff that was happening as well, in terms of what's becoming the popular look, in terms of just racially what's the popular look as well.
Black features are in right now, right?
Definitely in.
You know, like, the big lips are the trend right now. And it's really interesting, because I remember when I was growing up, people used to get cussed for having big lips.
Rubber lips.
Like,
and I think what it is these features look wonderful for those people who are, you know, being hideous about it. These features look great against a backdrop that is not dark. That's what it is, basically.
In other words, white girls drawing on these white girls drawing on these lips. You know, each to their own, but there definitely is, like, discussion about why is it that black girl features are not celebrated on black girls, but they are celebrated on girls who are not black.
I guess it's just making things easier to consume.
Yeah.
I guess that lighter skin's not so offensive. somehow. Well, it's not so offensive. I mean, even there's particular features removed from where you, what you usually associate them with, which is mm-hmm. blackness.
Mm-hmm. That's what it is.
Yeah.
So it's just racist anyway.
It's
just all racism.
And unfortunately. And but once again, if you surround yourself with things that you know, beam that out to you,
yeah,
it's gonna get you down. And that's why I make sure I surround myself with stuff mm-hmm. that is uplifting to me, whatever that is. Yeah. And I think that's what the individuals have to do
mm-hmm.
to strengthen, if you, you know, if you don't already have that sense of self.
Like, there's even blogs on Tumblr that are just dedicated to dark skin
mm-hmm.
people. And just even like little things like that, like you can follow these blogs and see all these really beautiful images of people all over the world, not just Africa, but people all over the world with dark skin, and just how they're just so proud of their aesthetic and they love the way they look. They're comfortable with how they look
mm-hmm.
and they're not going to allow any kind of outside prejudice to make them not like the way they look. It's that defiance of, you know, dominant culture and just, like, really standing strong in who you are. It's just amazing to see on the internet. And I feel like somehow it's trickling down into our subcultures as well. Hence why we're able to have exhibitions like Black British Girlhood.
Black British Girlhood, yeah. And actually, there was another thing as well that Nana was talking about in the interview, which was about, in terms of in Britain, there used to be that kind of clash, that versus between people from the West Indies, from the Caribbean,
yeah,
and people of African descent, like from West Africa mainly.
You know, and I know about it because of what I've heard people talk about, but I've never experienced that. That's because throughout my whole entire life, I had friends who were from the Caribbean
mm-hmm.
islands. Like, I never did not have friends from the islands.
See, I didn't actually grow up with friends from West Africa.
Wow.
Because in the area I grew up in, which is Brent,
mm-hmm.
it was a very, like, Caribbean, South Asian
mm-hmm.
kind of... Yeah, there weren't many West African people there.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't experience the clash, but I knew of it, definitely knew of the clash.
Yeah.
And that this... What I agree with Nana with is that definitely there's been more of a kind of coming together of like the diasporic peoples mm-hmm. and the people from current, you know, from Africa. I suppose
we all have the same struggle.
Yeah.
Okay, not like we all have the same struggle, but we're all dealing with similar issues, especially living in Britain. So I suppose we have that in common. And also, we're not really that different.
Exactly. Especially not in the eyes of someone who is not from those parts.
Exactly.
We all look the same.
Yeah, basically.
We all look the same.
Yeah.
I can't tell if we're West African or Caribbean or whatever. So I think that helps bring people together, definitely. That sense of oneness in the face of that.
Definitely.
If anything.
Yeah. So I want to ask you about something that you have just told me today, which I'm really excited about. Yes. Don't look at me like you don't know.
I'm so yeah.
You got some new music out.
Well, not me, but I am featured on an album that was released today, which is Tuesday the 28th of July. And Jamal Bufford, you know, previously formerly known as Buff One, released his album Freedom Is Today. And
who is Jamal Bufford?
Jamal Bufford, he's an MC from Michigan. And he signed to Mellow Music Group. He released this today via his Bandcamp. And it's produced by Ken Sai,
mm-hmm.
who is based in London. Background is like French and Haitian and all kinds of stuff.
He's really mixed, isn't he?
Really is, in terms of just his background. But he has a radio show as well called Ness Radio, where he... like has loads of hip hop and new music that's coming out via that as well, and interviews on there too, which is really cool. So they released that today. It's called Freedom Is, and it features a couple of other artists as well, who previously via Spread Love I've met basically.
Like Sabira Jade.
Yeah, and Archer, and Himmel's on it as well. Himmel who
is him or the guy that plays the guitar and sings?
No, that's another guy, Jesse. Not Jesse.
Who's who?
Jesse Gamage. Jesse Gamage is the guy who plays guitar and sings. That okay. came via I saw anyway via Spread Love.
Okay.
Himmel is a vocalist, a singer, mm-hmm. and everyone featured on this is just the people who I previously knew as well. There are obviously some American artists featured in it, but the British ones, pretty much everyone I know, which has been nice.
That's a really interesting project to have an American rapper having all these collaborations on his album with British musicians, don't you think?
Yeah,
like, no, that's quite rare.
It's a cool crossover.
It's really rare. I did get to listen to the track earlier today, and it sounds amazing. Are you okay with us sharing about
yeah,
the track
sure.
on the podcast?
Okay, that'd be great.
We'll do that. We'll give the listeners
a little something.
Yeah.
Be somebody else tonight on purpose. I think tonight I'll lose myself till I'm another person. I think I'll fake it till I make it. Let me start rehearsing. I think I wanna be somebody else tonight on purpose. I think I wanna be somebody else tonight on purpose. I think I'll lose myself tonight till I'm another person. I think I'll fake it till I make it. Let me start rehearsing. I think I wanna be somebody else tonight on purpose. I think I wanna be somebody else tonight on purpose. I think I'll lose myself tonight till I'm another person. I think I'll fake it till I make it. Let me start rehearsing. I think I wanna be somebody else tonight on purpose.
Parties popping, OPP was the naughty option. Sometimes I wanna lose myself, reinvent brand new myself. Sometimes I don't wanna choose just one. I can two step towards you and two step from Jameson or rum. Which one? Fuck it, just give me some. Because tonight I might just buy.
So tell me about the track. What is the track about, and what did the track really mean to you when you were writing the lyrics? Because well, you're talking about how you would be another person on
purpose. Just on that, just deciding to take on, I guess, another veil. Maybe it comes from, I mean, from when I was thinking about it, it was more of a tussle, like a thing of, you know, I'm doing my thing and maybe it's not quite coming to fruition as I would want to see it.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's almost like adjusting in order to, you know, maybe gain more success or gain more attention or whatever. And then for me, it was like, initially when I was putting my lyrics into it, it was almost like a no maintaining myself, but that actually didn't get used in the track. Mm-hmm. So I think it's literally just about being someone else for the night. Mm-hmm. I think when I was recording it, I might have been, in terms of the lyrics that I had, because the lyrics were already written, so
right.
I was just singing what was already there. Okay. And then I added like a little ad-lib at the end.
Yeah.
And the ad-lib had an extra bit about maybe maintaining myself, but that bit was not used.
Okay.
Maybe we shouldn't add this.
It happens. I mean, we do want our podcast to be
completely
as
real
and as,
but the thing is, yeah,
as authentic.
So
as
I
possible.
Think it wasn't used in order to maintain the whole thing of this is basically about literally just being someone else, taking on another guy's for whatever reason. Maybe I came from it from an angle of wanting to maintain, but no, it was about just taking on a completely different persona for the night.
For the night, which can be fun.
Mm-hmm. Alter ego.
Yeah, alter ego. I don't know. Do you have an alter ego?
I really don't.
That's way too much work. I mean, I suppose there are different sides or facets to one's personality, but I wouldn't go as far as saying that I have an alter ego. That's well, boy, that's a lot of work. And I'm just like such a low maintenance kind of person. I can't be bothered to keep up that whole, you know, one minute I'm going to be me and then the next minute I'm going to be this other persona. That's just a lot of work for me.
Yeah, I don't. It's not for me. That's
but
all.
I do understand why a lot of celebrities do give off an alter ego, you know, probably to protect their personal life, kind of like with Beyonce and that Sasha Fierce thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I actually think that whole Sasha Fierce thing was to allow her to break out of her shell or whatever.
Kind of like Destiny's Child perfection.
Yeah, kind of like a stepping stone to get out of this image that had been created by her parents, you know.
Mm.
And then Beyonce became Sasha Fierce, and then Sasha Fierce became Beyonce. The Beyonce that we know today.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They've morphed into one.
Yeah, they're just all one person now.
And how about you, Zainab, in terms of stuff that you're currently working on too?
I am working on something which I don't know if I really want to share, because I haven't, like, I'm always a bit nervous about, like, saying what, like, speaking about what I'm working on, just in case, like, things don't really, like, come together.
Sure, that's understandable.
But I am working on a documentary.
Ooh!
And I'm gonna start shooting. I'm currently in the stage of doing pre-production, and I'm gonna start shooting next month, August 2015. Wish me luck that we can get some nice weather.
Yeah, because
I want a lot of this documentary to be shot in natural light, and this weather that we've been having in London has not been good.
It's been like summer's done.
I feel like we just had this month of summer in June, and then that was it. And then a couple of hot weeks in July.
You know, it got so hot at one point that I purchased a paddling pool, and it only arrived today.
What?
On like one of the greatest looking days. I purchased it about 2 weeks or 3 weeks ago from Living Social, because the sun was at its height. It was burning hot. I was like, oh, this would be perfect in the garden.
There were days with a paddling pool. It was like almost 40 degrees.
Yeah.
And I just thought to myself, how long is this going to last for?
It didn't last long at all.
For our listeners who don't know what London weather is like, man, it's a bit of a struggle. It's a bit of a struggle.
It's just not consistent. It's the lack of consistency. I bought a paddling pool thinking this summer would continue, and it hasn't.
And I bought these really nice dresses to wear for the summer, and I have not worn like even a quarter of the wardrobe that I have been planning in my head since spring. It's just really unfortunate. But anyway,
London won't let you live.
London will not let me live. London will not let me prosper. But yeah, without this good weather or not, with this good weather or not, I'll make this documentary. The documentary is about women in design, and I'm gonna be interviewing several women that I know, most of who I'm actually friends with, and I'm just gonna be interviewing about them, about their work and themselves and their journey in the creative industry.
How did it come about that you were...
I've been planning to do this documentary since last year.
Oh, cool.
But, you know, life. And I also wanted to get some funding for it, but all the funding that is available right now is for, like, really large-scale projects.
Sure.
And this is not a large project. This is a really small project. I don't really need, like, 10 grand. For this,
hey, but it'd be lovely though.
It would be nice. I mean, I could get like some really good equipment, and you know, I could get some really good stuff to make this documentary look really shiny and great. But I think this documentary for me is also just an exercise in making film, as well as making film. It is also to kind of just flex the muscles,
sure,
if you will. Yeah, I have other ideas for the future, but I'm just gonna start with this little mini documentary series.
It'd be amazing to see. I've always loved the way you shot things, and
thank you.
Always loved the tone of everything that you shoot. It's beautiful.
Thank you very much.
And it's just, yeah, perfect. And I find yourself perfect.
Do you remember when we shot your music video for Gilded Age and that creepy house?
That was amazing. House was amazing, all the props as well.
But
so
that
cool.
House was really creepy.
Down in the basement,
yeah,
it was.
Yeah, it was like creaking. The floors were creaking, and there was lots of shadows everywhere.
Lots of shadows, lots of corners.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it added to the atmosphere. It was perfect.
But yeah, what about you? Are you doing Are you working on, or are you writing?
Writing, I'm actually always putting stuff into my voice memos, mm-hmm. ideas, little bits, all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But it was very difficult because of life. Are
you the kind of songwriter that needs to set aside time to fulfill a project? Or can you just be on the go, doing stuff here and there, and then like after 6 months you've compiled all this material that can eventually become an album?
I think both, definitely both. Setting aside time, I can sometimes end up doing nothing, who knows?
Mm-hmm.
But definitely, and I'm probably actually then leaning more towards, yeah, just compiling stuff over a certain period of time and then drawing it together. I think that has been my style, so. Mm-hmm. But I can definitely sit down for whole projects as well. And the main thing that's happening, what's been happening, is touring and travelling with Radamo and doing stuff with him in the Czech Republic, which has been amazing.
Did you go to the Czech Republic this year?
No, I went to Milan this year to represent the Czech Republic, which was
wow. What
fun.
Was that like?
That was really amazing. It was the World Expo in Milan, and it was beautiful. There's just lots of other countries there as well, but I went for the Czech National Day. So to actually represent the country.
What was that like when you got on stage?
No, it was lovely. Everyone was really, really warm. I mean, it's like, what are you doing up there? I know you're not Czech. Obviously I'm not Czech. But my producer is, so I'm honorary Czech. Honorary, that's what I'll be for the day.
I mean, you guys have been working with each other for years.
Yeah,
so it's safe to call you, you know...
Honorary Czech.
For sure.
I wouldn't mind. I don't think they'd mind. But it... I'm hoping to go back again in October time. I think there's a dance festival that's mm-hmm. happening. So we're still looking into that, see if it's something we can build around or if it's not really something that's going to happen. But we'll see. It's in the works. So, yeah, that should be the next big thing that I do for October. But for this month, the main thing I'm doing is going to Cuba.
Mm-hmm.
So hopefully when I come back, we can do like a little travel.
I cannot wait to hear about your experience of Cuba, because... Cuba just looks and always sounds amazing.
Was it Una Noche? That's the film we watched recently,
yes,
wasn't it?
Yes, we recently watched Una Noche. Janice recommended this film. I had actually been seeing this film for a really
There's
long time.
There's loads of stills all over Tumblr of it.
I've been seeing stills like just
beautiful.
All over the internet, but I never thought to myself, okay, let me sit down and watch this film. I hardly have the time these days to watch films in full. But this film was really good.
Yeah, it was beautiful looking.
Yeah.
I think some people have complained about the lack of development of the characters, and they've kind of blamed it on white gaze, basically, saying how, you know, it's just that they're kind of portrayed as simple island people
mm-hmm.
with not much, you know, depth. But I don't know, that didn't bother me while I was watching it.
It didn't bother me either, because I felt like much of the narrative was focused on their mission to get out of Cuba.
Mm-hmm.
They could have, like, okay, fair enough, the director could have written more complex parts to the story where you get to find out a bit more of the character's histories or whatever, but they did touch on that here and there, like, with one of the boys' mothers having AIDS and stuff like that, and just their life, their general life of poverty, and how all the characters of colour were getting treated like shit by the... senior staff members who were not of colour, if that makes sense.
They appear to be white Cubans.
White Cubans treating Cubans of colour like shit, basically.
Yeah, that was displayed. And the two main actors in it at the time when it was being premiered, like in Canada or something, they actually went missing.
That is
so
crazy.
They really actually escaped into Canada to escape Cuba.
That just shows you how real it is.
Yeah. But that film... I think I saw that film and was like, yeah, we're going to go on holiday, I think Cuba. And also I've been hearing to go there before it gets turned into Miami by America. Who knows what America's going to do to it now that it's opened up to them. They previously couldn't travel there unless they had like a reason, a business reason or a cultural reason. And they weren't allowed to go to the beaches when they did go there.
Wow.
So it was really restricted. The relationship between Cuba and America
mm-hmm.
really kept Americans out of it.
But I'm not gonna
which
lie,
everyone
though.
Seemed to enjoy.
I'm not going to lie. I love the way Miami looks, and I would love to go to Miami just to go and party. I know there's nothing really to do in Miami but party.
Sure.
But it just looks so good, because it's just one of those places where you don't really have to think about anything. You just go there and have a good
time. Is it like Vegas?
I think it is like a really hot, fancy, rich people Vegas. Yeah.
For me, that's not.
I don't think that would be your ideal holiday, right? I'm not a clubbing person.
No, I mean, I want to experience the culture of a place, and like when we go to Cuba, hoping to go to the ballet, the National Ballet, and something. Yeah, you know, I want to experience the culture of it. And apparently, they've opened the first tattoo parlor in January, because now that because it used to be illegal to get tattoos, I think it still is illegal, but they're now relaxing the laws around that kind of thing. So a tattoo parlor opened up in Cuba in January.
Is it really that strict? Like, is that really what strict? Communism is all about, like, just so strict that people can't even get tattoos.
Controlling the finances, controlling.
The question is, will you get a tattoo in Cuba?
And what tattoo?
You should get a tattoo. You and your husband should.
Will not. He will not.
Okay, well then you should just do it yourself then. Just come on.
There's nothing I really want.
You're going to Cuba.
I'd do something silly like put his name on my body, and that'll be it.
Would you actually put your husband's name on your body?
Right at the top of my thigh.
Someone tells me that he won't be happy about that.
No, he was like, I wouldn't stop you, but I wouldn't join you in doing this. So,
wouldn't participate.
Is this thing still going? Oh, it's still going.
Yeah.
I thought it stopped.
No, we're still recording, Janice. Wake up.
No, I don't have, like I told you with the fat transfer business. I can't tolerate pain.
Okay, so you're not going to Cuba to get tattoo. Are you going to Cuba to get fat transfer?
The healthcare is free.
What?
They have
Cuban citizens.
For Cuban citizens, right, yeah. Okay. Yeah. Right. They have a completely free healthcare. Like our NHS, but apparently miles better.
Well, you think theirs is better than ours?
Apparently they've also got this program as well, where they'll allow, it could just be Tumblr fairyland, who knows, but they'll allow any person, like of African descent, any black person, the chance to come to Cuba to study to be a doctor for free, like fully funded.
No one told me this.
Okay, we'll probably have to double check this and make sure I'm not just spouting absolute lies.
Wow.
But apparently, yeah, in terms of the education is free, the you know, the healthcare is free. I think they get rations as well in terms of food.
Mm-hmm.
There's also real restrictions in the way they eat as well.
Wow.
Well, it's very restrictive. Yeah.
Sounds interesting. I'm looking forward to seeing all the photos and hearing all the stories of Cuba.
Yeah.
Well, I guess that's it for the first episode of the London Girls podcast. I want to thank anyone who's listening, if anyone is listening,
it's still here. Thank you
so much for listening, and I'm really excited to, you know, keep developing this and keep sharing stuff with you.
Yeah, me too, bitch. Me too.
Is it?
Yeah, me too.
Where did you get that from?
Have you ever seen the bitch me too?
Where is bitch me too from?
Oh, it's that woman, and she's like, bitch me too. You've never seen the bitch me too lady?
No. You have to show
I have
that
to find
too.
Her.
Yeah.
Okay, so yeah, we've been the London Girls.
Thank you so much for listening, and we'll be back.
Now, ever since I heard Beyonce say, I've been drinking watermelon. Bitch, me too.